I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
This is Internet Marketing. Welcome back to the show where we give you the lowdown, the inside information, the word from the experts to help you use the internet as part of your marketing machine. Internet Marketing is brought to you by Academy Internet at academyinternet.com and Wireworld Media at wireworldmedia.co.uk. Hi, and welcome to episode 31 of Internet Marketing. In this episode, I have a chat with Dan about a purchase of a little tiny slice of Facebook by Microsoft for some unspeakable sum. And I also talked to Duncan Brody about how to successfully use article marketing. Mr. Rowles, how are you, sir?
I'm very, very well indeed, Andy. Thank you. Good to see you again, to be recording again.
Yes, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Far too long, but lots has happened, so there's lots to report on, luckily.
So today we're talking about, we've got some news about Facebook, and we've got some news about Google and Nielsen.
Yeah, just Google for a change. Not that we like to mention Google ever, but yeah, we've got some information about them.
Well, let's start with that story about Facebook. What's been happening?
Well, it's been in the news non-stop. Everyone's aware that, I hope, that Facebook is a social networking website that allows you to connect up to other people. And it's been the real darling of the media lately. Techies like it and, you know, users like it. So it's a very popular site. It's growing absolutely massively. But what's been interesting is there's been lots of talk about, you know, who wants to get a bit of ownership of it. Basically, there were some rumours that Microsoft wanted a bit and Google wanted a bit. And what it's ended up with now, and it's actually gone through, is that Microsoft has bought 1.6% of Facebook.
For how much?
For $240 million, which, if you work it out, makes the company itself worth about $15 billion. Now, I'm not entirely aware of the entire ownership.
Hang on. Just say that again.
$15 billion.
So we think that Facebook is worth $15 billion.
Well, that's the valuation based on that, but I don't really think that carries through. There's a few reasons it could be worth that much, because the amount of people that are looking at it. I've got some stats here that basically say that the amount of users is increasing by about 200,000 a day. There's 50 million registered users around the world. It is an international audience, so it gives you access to all that kind of thing. But some of the key problems are that, first of all, more and more businesses are blocking Facebook on their firewalls.
Can I ask why?
Well, just because people are wasting time at work, kind of chatting with their friends and sending each other photos and, you know, sending each other nudges and all kinds of silly things. So more and more people are worried about it. And the stat here, apparently, according to a report, 233 million hours of work are lost each month in the UK alone to staff messing around, basically, on social networks. So it's become an issue. So it's been blocked from work. So that is going to reduce the amount of people are interacting with it and the amount of time people are spending on Facebook in the first place. Okay, which could drop the value. It may not. It's not the issue. The key thing is that it looks like there was some bidding war going on to a certain extent between Google, between Microsoft. They both wanted ownership. Now, this is speculation to a certain extent, but I don't think, because 1.6% is worth that many million dollars, that you can multiply it through. Okay, because there's been a few things like this when YouTube was bought by Google for a massive market value. If you were to get an investment bank to go in and say how much is that worth, or someone else, it isn't worth that much because it doesn't drive the revenues at the moment. And we're having a few issues at the moment where people are going back to the dot-com boom days.
I was going to say, this looks a bit like then, doesn't it? The dot-com boom thing. It's not happening again, is it?
Well, I don't think it is really. I think that, you know, from Microsoft's point of view, for that 1.6 investment, what can they do with that? They don't need to own the whole site. They just need to be able to get in front of the people on the site. So that $240 million is actually probably quite a wise investment in terms of getting access to those people. They don't need to own the whole thing to get in front of those people. But as a business, it being worth $15 billion, how would it ever make that money back and over what period of time and that kind of thing? So from a pure business point of view, it isn't worth that. But if you look at it in the long view, the amount of people that are interacting with it, then for buying a small percentage probably makes sense. The nice thing is as well that the guy that started it is in his kind of mid-early 20s. So he's a extraordinarily rich man now, I'm imagining.
So he's quite an old guy really compared to us, Daniel,
yeah,
isn't he?
Exactly, you know. But yeah, I think it's an unrealistic overvaluation, but the 1.6% at $240 million probably offers quite a bit of value for Microsoft because it depends what they do with it. Nobody really knows what the ins and outs of what they're able to do with it, what that allows them to do. But just the fact they own a bit of Facebook is probably really what they wanted to achieve at the end of the day.
Now, what does this mean to businesses that are perhaps using Facebook to promote some facet of their business? As it's a double question, actually, because why is it that we're seeing this kind of cyclic popularity of various social network sites? What is it that's made Facebook so popular of recent months? I mean, before it was MySpace, wasn't it? And some of the other networking sites.
Yeah, I think the thing is that MySpace was kind of on the early entrance that people started to look at, and that got a big media buzz, and everyone started using it. And it was a real early adopters issue where teenagers and kids were going on there and using it. They got bored of it and moved on. Same with, you know, most things like that. And you can see the profile of a user on MySpace now is very different, where about 40-something percent are 35 and older. So the kind of the age group on there has changed a lot. Facebook was a much cleaner interface. You could have private profiles as well as public ones. So it was appealing to a broader range of people. And it was just a more straightforward-looking interface and application, so it didn't feel so youth-orientated. And I think that was why it got adopted so much. Well, the functionality was a bit better, in my opinion. And they've done some clever things now in terms of opening up the API so people can program applications for Facebook as well. And I think that's the real key thing that's created all this buzz, and everyone's trying to add things to Facebook, their own applications and bits of software. We're working with a website at the moment that's in development that allows you to, it's kind of a social network for sports, and it allows people to, they've got a football league they play in, soccer league, they will literally be able to put the scores in, and they can publish it into their Facebook profile by linking up through the Facebook API. So that's getting more people involved and plugging things into it, which will hopefully give it a bit more longevity than the way MySpace seemed to go. But in 2 months' time, we'll be talking about something completely different. I think Facebook will last because so many people are using it and therefore it's practical, but there's always going to be something new coming along. So you'll have lots of profiles on there that go stagnant, where people will move on to something else. There'll be a core user base, and I'm sure Facebook will do it very well in the long term, but people will move on. And just because you've got hundreds of millions of registered users doesn't mean they're all engaging and interacting the whole time. So from a kind of internet marketer's perspective, well, one, don't rush headfirst into social networks without having a good idea of, one, which social network should you be on, first thing. Two, don't try and offer your own social network, which is what so many big businesses have done. They've built these big social networks and gone, look, you can talk to each other and connect up. And everyone has said, why would we? We're already on Facebook. So they've tried to go head-to-head with them at the end of the day, which just hasn't worked out at all for a lot of businesses. So how can you leverage Facebook? Can you do something that plugs into it and connects to your website? And also, do you need to use social networking? It's a great thing, but could you use elements of it? Could you start a group on Facebook about your particular subject? Can you allow people to connect their Facebook profile to your website for using the API? So a bit of thought is required. Don't go steaming in. Don't spend $240 million on 1.6% of a business when you're not sure what it's actually worth, although I'm sure Microsoft has got a better idea than we have.
I'm sure they know what they're doing, Dan.
Well, you'd hope so, but I'll say nothing more.
Me neither.
And the key thing is, I think, social networking has become a real buzz thing. There's lots going on. There's a lot you can leverage, but make sure you're offering the key things you always should offer. Give something of value to whoever you're trying to engage with and actually work out why they would engage with you rather than somebody else. So don't try and repeat what other people are doing, and make sure your offering is different at the end of the day, no matter what you're doing. And that's always the rules for internet marketing at the end of the day.
So really, these social networks, they're kind of ready-built online communities that you can kind of winkle yourself into by various clever means, including...
Well, I think including, if there are discussion forums already, go and engage with those discussion forums. Find out who's actually really engaging, who are your potential customers. If people are coming into Facebook every day and you've got a bit of software that plugs into it that does something useful for them, you're going to put yourself in front of them every day at the end of the day. This is why social networks are worth so much, because people revisit on such a regular basis. You don't just go to a website once a month. You probably go every day or every week. So that's the real thing. So see what groups there are. See what software you can offer them. Don't try and repeat what they're doing already. But if there is an audience that isn't being catered for already, then fine. Build your own social networking site. But realise that it's going to take a while to do. And also, you need to make sure that you're not going to just build it and nobody comes.
I think there's so much more to be said about this whole thing about social networks. I know we've done an episode already on it. But don't you reckon, Dan, we should revisit this very soon again?
Definitely. We've been doing a lot of presentations and training on the topic recently. And we've seen some companies that have really kind of come of age with it and are doing some really good things. So I think what we'll probably do is next time we'll have a full session on it and just go into it a bit more depth.
Okay, why don't we move on to that second story now, the story about Nielsen and Google using some Nielsen data. Tell me the details here, Dan.
Nielsen basically work with marketing information and business media products, basically. So they sell data from various different things. They do the whole thing of estimating traffic and types of visitors to websites, okay, which a lot of people use to try and work out if they should advertise on a website or not. But they also work in the TV arena. Now, what a lot of people won't realize is that Google actually does TV advertising. They're involved basically with EchoStar Communications, Dish Network, and Astound's broadband cable service since May.
Well, so let me get this right. They're putting ads for themselves, for Google or for other people, onto cable networks.
Other people. So that.
Okay, so they're sorry to pull the mic away from you, Dan. Well, they're basically, I'm just trying to understand exactly what they're doing. So they're offering a kind of a we will sort of be the gateway for your ads to go onto various networks type of operation. Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, they're basically working as a media agency, a media buying agency, and that they're selling ad space at the end of the day on TV. So you want an ad on TV, they're one of the people you can go to on these particular networks. The thing with these networks, though, is that they've got set-top boxes. So Google can actually record when and how long ads are being watched for. So they've got a bit more data at the end of the day. Now, what they bought from Nielsen is the information about, you know, age, marital status, job, that kind of thing, a bit more of the demographic information, so they can build a bigger picture. That's interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, Google is now doing TV advertising, billboard advertising, internet advertising, which we're quite used to. But as well as just doing the pay-per-click stuff that we talk about quite a lot, the Google AdSense kind of program, they've bought DoubleClick, and DoubleClick were one of the biggest kind of online places to get advertising. You could book up advertising on various different websites, and not just on the Google sites, lots of different places. Just on a slight tangent, there's a story I know Andy's been following involving DoubleClick that he might want to mention a website you could go to read about it, but we won't comment on here for legal reasons, I think is probably.
Oh, the DoubleClick story. If anyone is interested, any of the listeners are into security, I would highly recommend that you have a listen to the Security Now podcast with Steve Gibson and Leo Laporte. Interesting story that's bubbling at the moment concerning DoubleClick and PayPal. I won't say any more. Just have a listen to the latest Security Now episode. I'm afraid I can't remember it. I think it might be episode 104, 105. Great podcast. Have a listen to it if you're into security and you're interested in that story. Sorry, Dan. We tangented off, didn't we? Carry on.
I like a good tangent. That's quite right. The key thing is that it's interesting that Google is moving into more and more different media channels. And one of the key things that I've heard people discuss and rumour about is that when you go into the pay-per-click, you go into your account management, you're going to be able to start picking different places you can advertise. So at the moment, you can advertise on Google, you can advertise on the Search Network, which is a group of websites that, you know, you can do searches in. You can do the Content Network already, which is other people that are publishing Google ads. Well, now they've bought DoubleClick, you're going to be able to advertise on lots of other big commercial websites as well. And you can choose where to place your banner ads and various different things. Now, integrating into TV and billboard I'm not sure they're going to tie those things together, but you're starting to see that Google is basically acting as an advertising agency. There's obviously a lot more to Google than that, but it's interesting how they seem to be quite clear on what they actually are, which is fundamentally a company that sells advertising. That's how most, you know, when I say most, I mean probably 99% plus of their revenue is made. So we just need to always bear that in mind when we're dealing with Google at the end of the day.
I just wonder, if Facebook is worth, how much was it worth?
I think we decided that it was worth $240 million for 1.6%, so $15 billion.
Dare we hazard a guess to how much Google's worth right now?
I'm thinking about $100. it's a lot of money at the end of the day. I mean, in terms of the share value has just gone above $600 a share, and they're thinking it's going to hit $700 a share because their profit forecasts, they're actually doing better than they expected. Okay. So interesting times. They're going from strength to strength. There's 1,000 different things going on with Google at any particular time, as we're all aware of, because we keep reporting on them more than anything else as well. Mm. But it's an interesting one to watch if that growth is going to continue.
Okay, this story about this data that Google have been using, what is the relevance to internet marketers around the world?
Well, first of all, it's to watch what Google do. What are they actually offering and how much control they have over the market? So if you're advertising, are you going to find yourself going to Google more and more? And how is that going to affect the pricing of your advertising at the end of the day? Because if it becomes more of a monopoly, you know, is it going to get more expensive? Pay-per-click through Google has got more expensive because it's become more competitive, because it's effective at the end of the day. So having a look at how that's actually going to affect you is going to be really important. So heads up on anything else on that stage. The other side of it is they're building a really solid image of what's going on with their customers. So they know what ads they're watching, when they're watching them, age, marital status, all that kind of thing. Now they can build a picture from that and work out what else people are interested in. Now, as a website owner or somebody that's doing internet marketing, you need to be thinking in the same way. What can you build up about your customers in terms of where they're visiting, how long they're visiting for? And you can use Google Analytics for that as well, if you're so inclined.
We've spoken about that before, haven't we?
We have, absolutely. And Google Analytics is one of the analytics solutions that you can use. Now, all I would say is that there is also quite a lot of issues at the moment regarding how much data you should actually be collecting about people and how long you store that data. And Google have been up in court on this whole subject and discussing it at length as well. So my one piece of advice, isn't it, is only collect data that you specifically need. Tell people why you're collecting it in the first place, okay? And only keep it as long as you actually need it. Because at the end of the day, none of us likes loads of information being stored about us. Some of us are more concerned about it than others. Mm. But at the end of the day, just be very cautious of this kind of thing, because there is a bit of a backlash going with it at the moment and people getting quite concerned about privacy online. So when you collect your data, collect the stuff you need, but tell people why you're collecting it.
Okay, well, that's a very highly valued Facebook and a data-ridden Google. We've had some questions, haven't we, Dan, including an audio question.
We have. We had an audio question sent in. Let me just rustle my papers there, as per usual. Elisa Cook very kindly sent in a question, actually audio recorded, and I have to say it was recorded very nicely as well, because Lisa does her own podcast on genealogy, and she owns a website called genealogygems.tv. And what you'll see from that is if you send us an audio question, you get an absolutely brilliant plug as well. So feel free to send in audio questions. We always want to receive them.
And Lisa, you've put us to shame that the quality of your audio is absolutely superb. Let's have a listen.
Hi, Andy. This is Lisa Cook in California, and I have a podcast called the Genealogy Gems Podcast. My website is genealogygems.tv. I have a question for you. I've recently started an AdSense campaign on my website, and so far the return hasn't been very good. So I know that you've done an episode not too long ago on AdSense, but I'm wondering if you could go into a little more detail.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Tale about website content. I'm wondering if maybe I don't have enough. Do you or Daniel know how much content we should strive to have on our website, or even how many pages of content in order to really maximize the AdSense campaign? And just in general, any other comments or suggestions that you might have? I love your podcast. Keep up the great work. We all learn a lot from you guys. Thanks.
Well, there we go. Dan, what's the answer?
I think the key thing is it's a bit of a split question. First of all, the whole thing of how much content do you need to actually to make an AdSense kind of a pay-per-click campaign work well? Well, there's a couple of issues. First of all, it's about how's the pay-per-click campaign working on its own before people even get to the site. So are the keywords you're choosing to bid on correct in the first place? Are they really, really relevant to what's on your website? Is the content of the ads correct? So have you got that right? And we've talked about this kind of stuff in some of the previous podcasts as well, which I think it's probably worth revisiting soon again because it's all changed so much since we last recorded it. The key thing is the amount of content you actually need on the website is a usability issue at the end of the day. And now you need a relevant landing page. So if you have an ad about a particular topic, you need a page that is specifically about what you're talking about in that ad. That's the first thing. You're about twice as likely to get a conversion of some description, people actually doing something, if the page matches the ad and you're straight there. Okay. Having looked at Lisa's website, the thing I'd say is, what is she aiming for people to do? Well, I'm assuming it's subscribe to the podcast, collect some data, but to buy the book. It seems to me that's the key kind of thing. And I think there probably needs to be more calls to action and more focus on that in the website. And I'm making some blind guesses here because I haven't seen the data from the account. In terms of the actual amount of content you need, you only need the amount of content that somebody is actually going to want. Now, that's a bit of a how long is a piece of string answer. But if somebody comes on and people are very focused on achieving something, they come to a website, they want to get a piece of information, they want your contact details, so on and so forth, you need to give them the relevant amount of content at the end of the day. That might be a page, that could be 10 pages. But what I'd suggest is the content you've got must have a call to action that says what the next step is. Mm-hmm. Every single page in the site must say, have you read about the book? Go and look at the book. Have you subscribed to our podcast? Go here. And the information needs to be clear. The other thing I'd say about the website is perhaps you could look at the whole thing of how people flow through the website by looking at the analytics and actually seeing where people are dropping out, where people actually come from the pay-per-click, what they're doing. So I think the first step here would be to look at the pay-per-click data and also to look at the analytics data and build a better picture. And then you can get a more specific answer of how much content you actually need. And since Lisa was so kind to send in our first audio question, what I'm going to try and do is arrange to get hold of some of that data and actually get a bit deeper into this and use it as a bit of case study so we can show people how you can improve your site quite simply. So a bit of free consultancy, which is never a bad thing. And we'll just try and take it a bit further. So the key thing is, think about what people are actually trying to achieve, give them clear call to actions, but the volume of content will very much depend on what you're trying to do. And I think that potentially the content that Lisa's giving away in a podcast should be repeated on the site to a certain extent as well. And I think that would really help with getting more conversions. Mm.
Interesting question, really, wasn't it? Because it combined this concept of, is the content right or is there enough with sort of pay-per-click? Now, I seem to remember that I've never played with this myself. Mm. Google Analytics, that does dovetail into pay-per-click, doesn't it?
Yeah, you can look at Google Analytics and absolutely separate out what's coming from natural organic search, what's coming from pay-per-click, and what's just coming straight into your website. And we can then say, we can follow it through to say, pay-per-click is doing X, Y, and Z, and particular searches are good and particular searches are bad. So you can actually start to build quite a strong picture of what's going on. And by looking at that, you can then get a much stronger answer to how much content you actually need.
It's all to do with data collection, isn't it? It's taking a leaf out of Google's book.
It is, but not going too far.
Not going too far. I'm getting too naughty about it. Okay, any more questions, Dan?
Nope, I think that was it for now. We've actually got a couple on for next time on in terms of what are the best resources and some not-for-profit questions as well, which is something we haven't really covered before. So I'm going to do a little bit of research and have a go on to that one next time.
Daniel Rowles, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Andy.
Now, just before we go on to the next segment, I must talk about our main sponsor, Academy Internet, who have been with us from the start. Now, Academy Internet are a full-service online marketing agency who cover the full spectrum of online marketing activities and objectives. It's all about using the technology to make your business work, and they're happy to guarantee that they will improve your return by at least 30%. And you can find them at www.academyinternet.com, or you can call them on 44 if you're outside the UK, or 01273 733 433. Okay, so let's move on now to that interview with Duncan Brodie of goalsandachievements.co.uk. Duncan is using article marketing very effectively, and I wanted to know just how he was doing it, so enjoy. It was recorded in a cafe, sorry about the background noise again, but I held the mic very close to his mouth, so the background noise shouldn't be too bad. Here we go, enjoy. Hi everyone, I'm with Duncan Brodie. Duncan has been running Goals and Achievements for how long, Duncan?
Just about 18 months now, Andy.
And Duncan is having some really quite interesting success with article marketing. And we're going to have a chat with him. And perhaps first of all, Duncan, just tell us what your definition of article marketing would actually be.
My definition of article marketing is helpful hints and tips around how to be more successful, which are posted online on the internet and available for viewing.
Tell us how you actually got started. Was it by intention or by accident?
Well, I actually got started on article marketing directly as a result of a conversation with a colleague in the US. I was talking about ways of getting approaches to publishers right for printed media. And the person, unknown to me, specialised in publishing and suggested that I give article marketing posting to online banks a try. She sent me a list of about 60 article banks and I just really started trying them out. And I just snowballed from there.
Just give us an indication of the kind of success that you've had with this, perhaps a number of reads.
Well, in terms of success, I've had about 50 articles published on the net over about 7 months. I've had about 16,000 views on those articles in the 7 months. And in terms of leads, it's actually been more in relation to building up my subscriber list for my newsletter, which has increased by about 200 to 300% since I started with article marketing.
How did you actually implement the bit where people subscribe to your newsletter?
Well, I mean, simply on my website, on the homepage, I've just simply got a sign-up option for the newsletter. So how I get people to the website is in article marketing, at the end of each article, you have an author's box where you can record a little bit about yourself, what you do for your business. And you have a link back there to the website inviting people to sign up to the free newsletter. Some people will click through, take a look at the site, and if they think it's right for them, we'll subscribe to the newsletter.
Okay, so basically you write an article, and at the end of the article, you basically have a link back to the squeeze page, if you like, for the email list. That's where you grab the email address and name. Now, a lot of people would say, you know, how do you find the time? Right, because I mean, how long are these articles, and how do you find the time to actually write them?
Yeah, it's funny. Anytime I speak to anyone about article marketing, they always say, "Yeah, how do you find the time?" Surprisingly, it's an incredibly efficient way of getting exposure for your business. Unlike printed articles, articles on the internet are typically 400 to 700 words. So what that means is a page to page and a half of typed word text. So for one article, to take it, type it and post it to an article bank probably takes about 40 to 45 minutes. So it's actually very time efficient. So if you're doing two or three a week, then you're talking 2 to 3 hours commitment.
And for those 2 to 3 hours commitment, that you're getting roughly how many subscriptions, do you reckon?
Well, I would say that, I mean, my last article that I put up, which is currently being rated 5-star on eZine Articles, it's had about 600 views. And over the last week or so, I've noticed there's been about 10 additional subscriptions to the newsletter in the last week or so.
So that's a conversion rate of about...
I would say that you probably, in terms of if your conversion rate, you're probably getting maybe 1 or 2%.
Yeah, which is pretty consistent. Yeah, it sounds very good. Now listen, a lot of people, including myself, would say, well, you know, I'm not a writer. Have you got any tips for how to write a good article?
Well, the first thing I'd say is you don't need to be a writer. I mean, I left school with a GCSE equivalent English, so I'm not a writer. It's the tips really are is to write about things that you're interested in and you know your client base is going to be interested in. Essentially, all that's required is to pull together your ideas in a bit of a logical structure. And popular ways of doing it is to have 7 tips on, 10 tips on how to improve your effectiveness. So really, it's all about structuring your thoughts in a very simple and straightforward way.
Do you use any tools to do that, Duncan?
At the moment, I do it all manually, but there is software you can buy which will essentially post your articles to maybe 100 or so directories. Article Submitter is one of those, and those typically can be purchased off the internet for around about £50 or just under $100.
Okay, so that's automating the submission process. Do you think it's worth going for those? I mean, for instance, why do you do it manually? Just out of interest.
The reason I've done it manually is I haven't gone for the scattergun approach of having it spread everywhere. What I'm actually finding is by concentrating on 3 or 4 off the article bank, I'm getting other people picking up and contacting me and saying, hey, we've seen your articles on ezinearticles.com, for example. We'd like to publish it on our site. Can we have permission to do that?
So people are approaching you to get your permission to put your article on their site?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the most recent one, which was a slightly bizarre one, was actually a site called Rail Recruiter.
Rail Recruiter?
Yeah.
So, as in Railway Recruiter?
Yeah. So it's obviously a company who were, you know, in the business of recruiting for the rail industry. But they've obviously picked up on some of the management themes and have approached me and said, hey, we'd like to use some of your articles on our site. Would you be okay with that?
That's amazing. What about ideas, Duncan? How do you come up with all the different ideas? I mean, are you sort of in the shower and suddenly you get loads of ideas, or you suddenly wake up in the middle of the night and you have some ideas with a pad by your bed, or how does it work?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of people think, oh, I couldn't really come up with any ideas. There's actually some simple things you can do. For example, one option is literally just to do a Google search around some keywords that your market might be interested in. So if I go in and do a keyword search around leadership and management, then I can end up getting some ideas from there. You can look at some of the things that other people are writing about on discussion forums. You can go to the library. The other day, I actually went along to the library, just pulled half a dozen management books off the shelf.
Hang on, you mean the old-fashioned brick library?
Absolutely, the Jubilee Library in Brighton, the brick building. But it's quite a new one.
I've never heard of that before.
And essentially got half a dozen books off the shelf, just got some themes and ideas, and I'll use those to pull together some articles.
So it's a bit like brainstorming then, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, just getting some themes and some ideas, yeah, definitely.
In your opinion then, What would you say are the key sort of benefits of article marketing?
Well, I think article marketing is probably just one piece of your overall marketing strategy. Someone said to me, you need a minimum of three channels to market. Writing, speaking, and networking tend to be the three that I use. So what's the benefits? Well, I think firstly, it's a good way of actually getting your search engine ratings up on Google, because when you type on your own name or your business, you start getting lots of link searches. Secondly, if you're wanting to build a list of people to a newsletter who you can potentially then sell on products to, it's particularly good for that. And I think thirdly, it's also very good for maybe giving you access to markets that you couldn't otherwise get. You know, I mean, I found I've had people from really India and, you know, places in America and really a whole range of places who have actually been wanting to subscribe. So I think what it does do, it gives you kind of reach to an audience you couldn't otherwise access.
What would you say to people who say, well, I've already got a blog and I'm just wondering sort of what's the difference between an article and a post on a blog? How would you answer that?
Yeah, I mean, I think actually both could be of use. I think probably the difference is in terms of, in my experience with the articles, is that the articles tend to be more informational based and they tend to be more how-to and tips, whereas maybe the blog's a little bit more conversational.
Would you say that the articles are longer than the blog post, generally speaking?
I think it would be fair to say that the articles are probably slightly longer than the blog post, but I guess people probably post articles slightly less frequently than they do a blog.
Well, thank you very much. That's really interesting information, and I think I'm certainly going to consider taking this up. I have posted... Actually, an interesting thing that the listeners might be interested to hear was that on my blog, the two posts that got hit the most, and I'm talking about a massive difference in hits compared to all the other posts, were two very informative posts that told people how to fix a very annoying problem with Audacity. So that kind of just shows you that something like article marketing, where you're doing these kind of how-to articles, probably are going to be very, very popular and probably going to result in a lot of backtracking traffic. But thank you very much, Duncan, and I'll leave the last word with you.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Andy, and I think, the proof in the pudding of popularity around how-to is Wikipedia. So thank you very much.
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I do hope you enjoyed it. And I would love to hear from you, so if you've got any questions or comments that you would like aired on the show, do send them to info@academyinternet.com. And also feel free to send in MP3 files, which we'll play as long as they're not rude. If you're a subscriber, we'd like to thank you for your valuable time. If you haven't subscribed, then there's a couple of ways that you can have this podcast delivered to your earbuds automatically. You can find Internet Marketing on iTunes, or at the academyinternet.com, or wirewordmedia.co.uk/IM for mother websites, and follow the subscription buttons. We'd also love to receive comments via iTunes. See you soon.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.